083 333 975. Keep your texts and comments coming in, and if you want to enter into our competition, as I said, we've a copy of a lovely book to give away. It's called True Blue: The Alfie Hale Story by Dermot Keyes, and Alfie is here with me in studio. So just text in the word True Blue, and we've had dozens of people texting in already. Alfie, good morning.
Morning, Damien.
It's great to talk. Great to see you again.
Well, the same here, because we've been looking at each other for a long time and nothing has changed, really. So that's a good sign.
Well, you look great. Congratulations. And well done on the book. It's an excellent book. Dermot Keyes is an excellent writer, a very good journalist, and he's written a number of books in relation to different people in sports, especially in Waterford and beyond. And he did a very good job with this. So I'd recommend, if anybody wants to get a nice book for Christmas for any loved one, you can't go far wrong with this. And it's available in all the good bookshops.
And it's for charity.
So a lot of people would have heard you at different events over the years, and maybe people would have said to you, you should write a book. Why did you write this book? You have a little letter there again, which kind of references this.
Yes, it's a letter from Eamon McEnany from Waterford Museums. And
2014.
Exactly. Eamon had invited me to speak on a night down there, and I was to follow on from a man called Robert Fisk, famous war correspondent. And I said to myself, what am I getting into here, basically? So, but I said I would go down and
so you
and
were
do
to
it.
Speak after Robert Fisk, and you were thinking, how do you follow somebody like Robert Fisk?
Exactly. And but I went down, and there was a good support from family, friends and others that wanted to know about the football days and whatever. And I'm big into history, as you know yourselves, in politics. But I stay away from it most of the time, because it can get too serious, and it can get to the point, as we all know, where divided opinions and you fall out with each other. And I'm used to that. But basically, after the invitation, and when it was all over, there was a cousin of mine, Michael White, former principal of Ballygunner Schools, approached me and said he enjoyed it so much he thought I should write a book. And he was seriously looking at me in my eye, and yes, you need to do this. And I'd been asked before, but I just didn't think about it twice, and I left it go. But after then again doing a stand-up questions and answers with other people, I decided at my age, I was coming to the end of the football days, big time. There was games like squash still there. There was the game of golf. I was just starting to play it. Well, I was gone 60. It was something to do. But I felt that after all of the years in football, there was a big gap left in my life. And what do you do? And I didn't want to be seen to be an old man walking around being grouchy and everything else. And I've said to people before, look, as soon as my legs are gone or I can't listen to a good song, put me down 6 feet under, quick as you can, because I don't want to be in anybody's way. And I can't think of living without being able to listen to music or to talk to people. And so from that point of view, then I look back on my life, and so many people said to me when I first came home from England and I was looking for a job, and War Football Club, that was the onus was on them to get me a job if I signed, because I wanted to play part-time football and I wanted to go back to what I termed the real life and to look for. And in the days that rolled up into that, with the start of the season at Waterford Football Club, I met many people who invited me to an interview for jobs, and most of them said, as an introduction, you're old Alfie's son, aren't you? And so it wasn't about football, it was about you're Alfie's son. And I said, yeah, I'm Alfie Junior. And to me, it was a lovely compliment. And I wrote the book on the basis, or I decided to go with the book on the basis that I look back to Arnagrena, where I grew up, and Dominic's Place, where I was born, that my mum and dad, they were absolutely brilliant to me. But I would say that about all the neighbours of Ardnagrena that I grew up in.
Now, again, well done to you, and well done to Dermot. Again, a very accessible book, and best of luck to Dermot. He started a new job up in KCLR. Hope he gets on well. Was it an enjoyable experience looking back on your life and gathering the information and deciding what goes into the book and what stays out, and getting your friends and family to help with the research? Like, how did you find that experience?
I found the experience very much such hot and cold. Hot for being very happy, and cold for being wondering, am I doing the right thing here? Because Dermot himself will tell you that we had many a night when we disagreed, and it was a question of one or the other giving in. And I think it came to the point where basically I was asking Dermot to leave things out or to put things in, and he said no, no, no. And I would say yes, yes, yes. And the battle went on, and basically I felt summing it up myself. He had told me, look, 400 pages, or 400 words in a page. And I said, fine. And so he said, you write things out and see how you come out of it. And what happened is basically, and I realised how good he was at his job, is that when I wrote, we say 20 words, to explain something, he did in 5 words. So he said, we have a book and we have a number of pages that we have to stick with, and yeah, there are some things we have to do, leave out, and some things we have to...
And that's what happens with editorial judgment and creativity and stuff like that. On the issue of looking back on one's life, and again, thank God you're healthy and hearty and everything is good, and you're playing the golf up in Waterford Golf Club, and hello to all the members up there. How important is it for people to look back and appreciate and evaluate and, I suppose, understand the precious nature of life?
Well, in writing the book and thinking about why, what is the incentive to write the book? The incentive to me was that my grandchildren could read this book about my life through my mother and father and how they brought us up. There was 9 of us plus my mother and father in the family, and we were part of a group in Ardnagreina, originally Dominic's Place, but we moved into a bigger house in Ardnagreina, and with the 9 children. Our family home was a very, very happy home. We were surrounded by hurlers in the GAA. We were outside of the Brett family, next door neighbours, who were fantastic, were the only people that played soccer in Ardnagreina and the surrounding areas. So, but lo and behold, don't be surprised, because the GAA people were brilliant to us. They were really brilliant to us, and they enjoyed seeing us having a bit of success, the 4 brothers and my father before him. And it was a community of helping each other. And when I look back now, and it's lovely to look back, and there was families that were struggling badly. There was families who were doing quite well. There was families with great potential. There was families with a great history in their family. All surrounded us. And it's only you don't appreciate it at the time of your growing up. But when you look back on it, and some people, the sadness of falling away, some died early, some were in accidents that you wouldn't have sort of accepted at any level. And it was just a life that was in Ardnagreina, and it was a sort of, from Waterford City's point of view, was up the hill. And basically it was the next generation of people, and it was the generation after the Second World War, and things were very, very tight. But the Irish people, as they're known to be, when they're up against it, they really see them at their best, for charity wise, in every respect.
They do. One of the things about the book as well, you work in and interweave the issues of the day and the history. It's like a social history of Waterford since World War II on a personal level, which yes, is lovely. And it combines then the idea of obviously having to emigrate, and some people had to emigrate, others went by choice and different things like that, but also the industrial base of Waterford, the love of sport. But just on families briefly, like the importance of family to you over the years, and many of them helped you with this book.
Absolutely.
And that's still at the heart of your soul.
Well, it is, because I've had lucky enough to have 5 sisters. The eldest, Hannah, died some years ago, and she was a terrific woman in her own right. The other 4 sisters are still alive and galloping, as my sister Lily would say. She's now in her 90s and very proud of it, and nobody stops her from running into town, and she wants to do it. Full of energy. And there's Kathleen, who's next to her, just the same, just coming up to 88 and more, and looking forward to 90 rather than looking backwards. But Alice and is the youngest, and there's Myra, who's the only one at home, and I have to say, individually and collectively, they were stars in my eyes, really.
And the book is dedicated to Sis, Daryl, Dean and Jenny.
That's right. Well, I can't say any more than what I've said in that book about them. They've been absolutely brilliant for me. And I've seen the best of the boys and Jenny when it came to the recession there in 2008. And they really, instead of feeling sorry for themselves and go out moaning and groaning about it's this guy's fault or this bank's fault or whatever, and they were at fault, let me say that publicly. I'm talking about the banks now. But Daryl and Dean just got stuck into it and Jenny got stuck into it, and the three of them are doing very, very well now.
They drove on. Stay with me, 083 333 975. Lots of people texting in the word True Blue, the two words True Blue, if you want to enter into this competition, a copy of the book to give away. And some people texting in some lovely comments about Alfie, and lovely to hear Alfie, and I'll come back to those in a few minutes. Alfie, again, we're not going to have enough time to go through everything, but a couple of quick fire questions. And again, within 30 seconds, yes. I'm going to ask you this now. What was Kevin Keegan like?
He was brilliant. He knew exactly what he wanted to do when he was 12 years of age, to be a professional footballer and to play at the highest level. And if determination ever was questioned in anybody, if you want to be good at any particular sport or your job or whatever, determination comes first.
And for the listeners that don't know, how did you know Kevin Keegan?
Kevin Keegan was born in Doncaster, where I played for 3 years. His father was a great supporter of Doncaster Rovers. He asked for Kevin to be invited for trials to Doncaster Rovers. They didn't accept him. He then turned to Scunthorpe, which is from Waterford to Tramore in distance with Doncaster. And Bill Shankly picked him up from looking at him at Scunthorpe and went on to play with Liverpool. Had a great career, and a great career in Germany as well. And he, every ambition that he had, he achieved. He was brilliant.
You also had a connection with Roy Keane. What's Roy Keane like?
Incidentally, Kevin Keegan was said I was his favourite player, looking at heading the ball. But anyway, sorry.
What was Roy Keane like?
Roy Keane was, as he is today, was Roy Keane. Everything comes straight out, and he says exactly what he thinks. There's no diplomacy about
it. Were you able to deal with him?
Pardon?
Were you able to deal with him?
More than able to deal with him, because I had gone through football and management and in playing careers and knew what he was. And it was his father who came to me, appealing to me. Cork City had him as a player. They had Pat Morley as a player afterwards, and they let both of them go for nothing. They didn't think they had anything to offer. And it's Roy's father that I knew quite well. And Roy's father knew that I was very happy to give young lads a chance. So he asked me, would I talk to Roy? And I did talk to Roy. And we had a good conversation. I brought him to play here in Waterford Crystal. And everybody said, who's the guy number six? He looks very good. And he was very good. But he wasn't any better than what we had in that particular match. Paul Cashin and other players were terrific. And we played, I think it was West Bromwich Albion in Cove the following weekend, and I put him in that game, and he did very well. And I said it to the manager and the coaches, watch the two guys in midfield, Cashin and Keane. They're good enough to go across. And after the game, we drew 2-2 with him. I said, what about Roy Keane? We've got enough players. We don't need any more. So, and within a matter of a month,
the
chap played for Chelsea, John Hollins. He became the Spurs scout. And he rang me and he said, he had played for me with Cove, John Hollins. And he said to me, Alfie, why didn't you ring me? That I'm the Spurs scout now about the lad Roy Keane. And I said, I did ring you. And I left word for you there, look at this lad, he has something to offer. Because I was about to leave Cove at that stage. And he said, I feel you let me down. I didn't leave you down. I said, if you ask the staff there and the secretary, did I ring looking for you, John Hollins, to have a look at Roy Keane? But at the end of the day, as Roy said to me, I said to Roy, I want to sign you, but I'm not signing as an amateur. Because too many players walk away as amateurs and are free to go. I said, I need you on a professional basis to work on you. Otherwise, I have no interest in what you do from here.
And that chapter on Roy Keane is absolutely brilliant. 30 seconds.
Yes.
What advice would you give to the Blues players playing tomorrow night in the relegation playoff?
They are coming from a Premier League to play a First Division, which is a division down from them, they've got to up the pace of the game. They've got to go to win the game. They can't wait to sit on a one-goal lead because they're not capable of doing it. They're giving away too many soft goals. They need to push on. They need to up the pace of the game. The pace of the game that I've seen over the last few weeks, some of the games, they've played nice football, but they've played safe football, which is passing back, passing square. There's very few, and they have a good goal scorer. The lad up front, Amund,
yeah.
Portig Amund, and give him enough chances, he will put him in front and he'd keep him there in front. But they need, Talca Park is a tight park and it's a difficult park. But being the senior team as against the junior team, they've got to go and show it.
You have a philosophy, make things happen. 10% make things happen, 20% watch things happen, 70% say what happens. Managing and playing and experience. How would you sum up that philosophy?
Well, that philosophy in football terms, if you look at the great players of the day, Messi, Maradona, from an English point of view, an Irish point of view, John Giles, Jimmy Greaves, all great players, they make things happen. Most players, maybe at full-back position, centre-back, they're not in a position to make things happen. They can influence the game by defending very well. But if you want inspiration, if you want somebody to turn a game that's deadlocked, you need to have a Giles, you need to have a Maradona. You need all these players. And basically when you say this, and it sounds funny, like 10% make things happen. 20% say, well, yeah, I'm watching what happened. But the other 70% said, what happened? And that's in life itself. If business people, top business people.
And is that why you were so good at football? Because you made things happen. You had it in your head. You said, I'm not going to be a passenger on this field, either in business or in football. You're going to make things happen.
Well, I never saw myself as being better than anybody else locally speaking. They're all great young players in my view. And I got opportunities which probably took them. And there's so much to football about playing here. There's the technique of controlling the ball. There's the ability to hold the ball when you're under pressure from other people. There's the ability to come from 2-0 down to stay in the game and play on. There's all sorts of things that there's questions you have to answer for. It's like a scout going to watch a player in Waterford and he goes and his advice, look at this guy. The guy scores 2 goals and he's then asked, what do you think of this guy? Yeah, looks good. Who are you playing away from home next week? That's where I want to see him. Where is he when the chips are down? Are they 2-0 down and he's away from home and he has no back? Can he play? All these things come together to nurture a very good player. And from that point of view, it's your question is, I didn't see myself being any better than anybody else. But there was things that I did, like I could get a tennis ball. And I remember reading Charles Buchan magazines of the 1950s, 60s and flicking the ball up with my foot and to catch it on the back of my neck and then flick the ball back over my head, back onto my foot again. And then when I did that and achieved that, I did it with the other foot. Then I wanted to make sure that if I could play it on the left, my left foot was going to be as good as my right foot. So all of these things I did. But if I didn't have the determination to stick with it, and the determination came from love of it. I mean, young people today will say, well, I want to be a footballer. Why do you want to be a footballer? Oh, my daddy said I'll make plenty of money. He won't make a penny. He won't, because it won't come out. The desire to play football comes first in all the great players. You have to. It's like being good at your job. You imagine going into a job in the glass factory and you don't like going in. You won't be very good at it. You will not be very good because you're not concentrating on what you're doing.
You've just summarised philosophy of life, and you have to be. I love my job. You love what you've done. You're brilliant, Alfie. That's why I love you. That's why I think you're brilliant. Genuinely.
Thanks, Damien.
No, I think it's great.
Yeah.
It's great. And
I've been lucky. I've had a great life. I really have. Jenny and Darlene Dean and Sis, they backed me up on everything. And I mean, they were alone, left alone. I don't even have any hand in their growing up. Sis did all that.
I know.
Everything. And it's turned out great, thank God.
Thank you.
Thank you.
God bless you.
Thanks, Damien. Well done.